Okay. So, we'll finish up our lecture. Just see again with a quick review of the basics of networking. Okay, so the whole purpose of networking is to deliver digital signals from point A to point B. These days, most of those signals are in the form of packet delivery. Okay. And these packets have to support a huge number of different types of applications. Okay, so from tiny little pieces of data to large chunks of data to data that's is being extreme, so it has a sequentiality to it, and delivery time requirements. Okay. Now, the problem with having all these different sorts of data over a single network is that they all have somewhat different delivery requirements, so if you're sending a file, well, it can be relatively slow, but it all better get there, and at some point it needs to be, if it's been chunked up, if it's been in the packets, it has to be reassembled into a coherent unit. With something like streaming, well, it doesn't all have to get there, but what does get there has to be pretty much in sequence, and if there's too much variation on the delays, then you're going to start losing more of the data. Okay. The little messages, well, you again run the risk of losing them, and potentially also it's hard to deliver little messages efficiently. You know, you've got all this big mechanism built up, and you only want a teeny tiny little bit of data. Okay. But basically, we can characterize what our applications need from their data delivery in terms of, well, is there a bit rate? So if you're streaming a video, you better have at least the data rate of the video available. Do we have delays? Anything interacting, and again, delays become important. Loss, can your application afford to lose the data or not? And jitter, which is again, the variability in the delay. So if you're doing something like streaming, then jitter becomes important. You have to play out at a fixed rate, so if you're delaying too long, you start losing things. So, recommendation G1010 was conducted, this is produced in the 80s actually, but it did a survey of the types of applications and their data delivery requirements. Okay, and it's still sort of again relevant, with the possible exception of bitrate. Okay. So just to have sort of concrete examples, the easiest ones are a voice stream. Well, you need the gold standard of voice replication is to sample 8,000 times per second, that's twice the bandwidth. If you sample like that, then you can fully reproduce your signal. Assuming that is actually the bandwidth that's sort of a good working bandwidth. And you then have to digitize the samples with 8 bits. Okay, so you have it. So that gives you again the data rate at which you need to send the signal. Okay. Having said that, it's okay to lose a few of the samples. The ear will smooth over any issues with quality. At the opposite end of the spectrum, we have file transfer. Rates not terribly important. I mean, you don't want to wait forever, but you're willing to wait seconds, certainly, tens of seconds, minutes, depending. But you need all of your files, so you can't.
Loss is not going to be acceptable.
Control messages, again, they have a different characteristic. Again, their generation tends to be bursty. Response time may matter, so delay may matter. Loss may or may not be a problem, depending on whether there's any sequence of messages or just a single emergency message. Multimedia streaming. Again, rate is important. If you can't send at the rate, if you're not given bandwidth which matches the rate at which you're sending, then you start losing data. Delay, or again, the variability in delay is important. Loss can be handled.
And exactly what rate you need is can be variable. Okay, so we won't go over these in any sort of gory detail, but again, G1010 surveyed all of what they saw as the critical applications, so audio, video, data transfer, and the core performance targets for them, and the performance targets are in terms of delays, jitter, so variation in delay, loss, and possibly others. So if you have video, you have to synchronize the audio and the visual parts of it. Okay, and so that goes on.
So based on that, it divided the applications into categories, and the categories are based, again, on delay tolerance and error tolerance. And so this concept of having, again, traffic classes, traffic types, plays into how the networks will think about providing quality of service for these applications. Okay.
So, why do we care about the delivery characteristics or the application requirements, the quality of service? And, the issue is that the network design is going to impact on how well you can provide for these quality of service parameters.
Okay. So what we'll do is we'll look at historically what happened, and so historically there were telephony networks transmitting voice signals, and there were data networks transmitting data to applications, and again those would either be in the form of fairly basic commands or possibly file manipulation, later on things like email, spreading out to internet applications. Okay. The networks were set up with certain applications in mind. Again, the telephone network was set up thinking about voice conversation. The data networks were set up thinking about basically sending short bursts of information. Okay. Different design decisions were made based on this. And what we see in terms of wireless networks is that there's an evolution on one hand from telephony networks, that's the cellular path, on the other hand from data networks, that's pretty much everything else. Okay, there is a bit of convergence now, but again, they're organized differently because of this different view of the world at the time. Okay, so what exactly is a network? Well, what we're dealing with obviously is data networks, so things are hooking up computers, processors, but various types of networks have existed for a long time, and people have been using networks, network systems to communicate for a long time. Okay, so examples could be signal fires built on hilltops, so to warn that you're being invaded. So how does that work? You light one fire, the guy sees it, when he sees it, he lights his fire, and you keep, it keeps propagating on. So you have this idea of relays and propagation of signals. A little smoother than that would be the idea of semaphores. Again, you have visual communication. Now it's a bunch of flags which allow you to send slightly more complicated messages than just on-off. So there's a fire, there isn't. Okay. Messengers on horseback, again, could carry quite detailed letters. In all of these examples, again, we have this idea of we have a limit to the range of the communication. We're from point to point, so your fire can only be seen a certain distance. Your semaphores can only be seen from a certain distance. The horses get tired, so they have to stop. If you want to extend that distance, then you're going to have to relay the message. So again, the second fire is lit, the semaphore message is recreated, the messenger hands his message to the next rider who moves on. Okay. And so there's some idea of resource sharing, so you can send multiple messages along any of these networks. Okay, so this idea of relaying messages from point to point to point has existed in a long time, and it's just eventually evolved again into telephone networks and then computer networks. Okay, what we're interested in is digital messages, obviously. Okay. So arguably, your telephone network is the oldest network still of interest. And the idea of telephone networks is quite old, from the late 1800s. It evolved from the older telegraph networks. So again, sending not voice signals, but Morse code and a wire. Again, it was designed to do a single thing, which was to carry voice signals. Okay, and it was designed to do that quite efficiently. Okay. Again, the design was based on 64 kilobit per second bit streams, at least since the 80s when the signals became digital. Okay. It did this by reserving end-to-end resources and was represented an efficient use of the network, because when you're talking, you're actually using exactly that amount of resource. Okay. So, when you think about this voice-oriented telephony, you still had the issues. Your data had to be relayed, even down the wire. Your signal is not going to go forever. And you can't have wires connecting every person to every other person. Okay, so data was relayed and data was routed. Resources are shared among the population, the networks of the telephone users, although, again, once you make a connection, you aren't sharing your resources. The network is hierarchical, so you start at endpoints, and you have relatively low speed connections, and then you aggregate data into a core network, which works at very high speeds. Again, the services were connection-oriented, which meant that the idea was you set up the connection and reserve the resources initially. In terms of quality of service, there are relatively few quality of service issues because your resources are reserved. So you still have to transmit your data, but it's going to be done relatively smoothly. Okay. So the internet is about 100 years later than telephone networks, and it was tied to the rise of computers. And so one of the original purpose was to connect dumb terminals to mainframes. So the idea of having your own personal computer was still in the distance. It didn't exist for institutional mainframes, but you wanted people to be able to access them through terminals. Again, this would contrast with the way I started out, which was punch cards, and so you would type out to run a program. You'd design your program, and you type out each line onto a card. And so your program was a stack of cards. You brought your stack to a desk, and you handed it to the man. He smiled nicely and hoped he didn't drop it. And then, when he got around to it, depending on who else was around, he stuck your cards into the reader. And an hour later, you got the printout of your results, and you realized you made a typo, and the program wasn't going to run. So I don't want to hear any complaints about programming. Okay. Anyway, so it would be a lot easier to if you could sit at a terminal and submit those programs yourself than having to carry this stack of cards somewhere. And then later, as the idea of personal computers and desktop computers caught on, then it became a way of sending data from one computer to another computer. The original project was sponsored by the U.S. military, so robustness in terms of failure, so if you're, in the middle of a war, they wanted that network to still be up and running. So, when you were at a dumb terminal talking to a mainframe, again, what you were doing was you were just typing, and so you're sending these short little bursts of data, and you were doing it sort of in an unpredictable fashion. So the telephone networks, that wasn't really a good use of resources. So decided to think, something else. Okay. What arose from this, in reasonably short order, was the TCP/IP protocol stack, and this is. Again, a suite of protocols that defines the internet, in particular the idea of IP addressing. Okay, defines what we mean by the internet today. Okay. And so it was proposed in 1973, and when you think of it, in a fairly short period of time, it became the approved standard. Okay, so what were the characteristics of these original computer networks? Again, we have this idea that we have to forward the data on. We have to share our resources. We're, again, not string wires between every point and every other point. We want robustness, so if bits of it fall over, we can still get our data through. The data that we were sending had this bursty nature to it. It was short, and it came at unpredictable intervals. And so if we tied up a connection to send this little bit of data, that wasn't going to be very efficient. So packet switch networks were proposed. So you bundled your data, you sent it into the network, and the resources were then used on an as-needed basis. So, okay. And so this is, from a network's perspective, this is efficient now. If there's something to send, the network can send it. And it's not going to be waiting just because somebody's holding onto a resource they don't really need. And so the problem with this is that this form of resource sharing has a lot more delay factors. It's not, if you're thinking of quality, delay as defining how good your data delivery service is, this isn't great. Okay. The main, probably the biggest issue is the queuing delays. So we're sending the data into the network. If the resource is not available, the data has to queue up and wait for the resource to become available. Okay. So, again, just from a historical perspective, we have this divergence of networks, which is based mainly on the type of data they saw it as a business to carry. Okay.
And what's happened then over the years is that
more and more different types of applications have emerged. Okay? And so where there used to be this sort of command-centric transmission of data and voice signaling, we now have voice over IP, streaming data, the internet, all of which have different delivery wishes or requirements. Okay. Now, all of the networks have evolved to cater for these different, this diversity of data. Again, we saw that in 3.2.1. We saw the, actually we didn't see it a lot in 3.2.1, but we saw a lot in 3.2.1 was actually that the application adapted to meet the sort of basic reality of the network. What we'll see in wireless networks is that there are various attempts to cater for quality of service. And so in terms of evolution, our telephony networks have sort of evolved from voice-only networks to handling packet delivery quite well. In terms of our data networks, like our local area networks, there has been attempts to insert quality of service mechanisms into these networks, which at least allows for along the sort of most restricted link, which is typically this wireless access link, allows for some differentiation of different sorts of applications. Okay. So, we can, when we're talking about networks, there's sort of some fundamental concepts to understanding how the data is delivered. And so we'll just again mention a few of these, starting with network services, which is the idea that our network will make some promises in terms of data delivery. Generally, these promises are really basic. Okay. So we can say we'll either set up an end-to-end connection or we don't. We either deliver it reliably or we don't. Okay, that's basically as far as network services, our basic network services go. Catering for those network services, we then have the idea of resource allocation. So how do we decide what data to send on the link at any given time? Okay. And depending on what network it is, you'll have, again, different ways of doing that, and that will make it easier or harder to provide those network services. Okay. The network, again, these are quite basic network services. They don't actually say anything about things like delay, and so what we can do is we can look at how they factor into delay. Okay, they're not going to actually offer any solutions, but we can see what problems they throw in throwing away. Okay, and then we're going to discuss the idea of a layered network architecture. So, again, that would be what's used primarily in data networks. Again, it's not telephony networks are different. So, when we get to the cellular and talk about the cellular architecture, I'll remind you again that it's not actually adhering to the layered architecture of data networks. Okay. So this isn't examinable, but it's worth keeping in the back of your mind just in terms of understanding how these various networks evolved and why they're doing what they're doing. Okay. So, again, our networks are sort of a million miles away, offering data transport services, and they have a couple of factors. They're either reliable or not. They either connect, offer end users a connection, or they don't. And so, again, in terms of data networks, we have basically TCP and UDP. So an offer of a connection-oriented reliable service or an unreliable connectionless service. Okay, this says nothing about our delay, et cetera. Okay. So it's in terms of service requirements, we can, any combination between reliable and connection-oriented is possible, and there's some application for which that would suit.
Okay, so I think that slide goes out of place, so we'll just switch over it.
Okay, so our original design for networks basically was better with the idea of supporting either voice type services, so streams of data that persisted over a long period of time and hence should be connection oriented, or short bursty bits of data, which would make more sense to not have. So quality of service is not a core concept for any of the basic services provided. We'll see in the cellular world it was a little easier since that was connection oriented. In the data networks world, it's had to be sort of added on
after the facts. Okay.
So we have two basic ways of allocating our resources. The first, circuit switching, means that we're reserving the resources end to end. Okay. So that means that our For the circuit, there's no sharing of resources, so that means that over any link, you'll get a portion of that resource, a portion of the link bandwidth, and you will also need part of the switching resources as well. The plus of circuit switching is in terms of performance, your performance is guaranteed because you have your resources all the way through. The minuses are, again, that you have to set up this connection. So if you're just sending a little tiny piece of data, that's all overhead, that's additional work. And if you hold the connection and they're just sending the odd bit of data, then you're not using your network resources very efficiently. Okay. So the network resources can be divided into pieces. So you can have several channels along any given link or several routes through any given switch. The primary methods of sharing the links are frequency division and time division multiplexing. And again, you've seen this all before. Just if you have a single link, you can divide your frequency bandwidth up into sub channels and allocate the sub channels to different users. And similarly, in time, you can sort of take turns sending the information of different users. Okay. But once that sub-channel is allocated to a user, then there's no further sharing possible. Okay. So, for packet switching, the idea is that in some cases, this dedicating channels to users is not efficient. So, we want the users to only use the resources as needed. And so we bundle up our data into packets, and each packet then will use full link bandwidth to be sent, and obviously they can only do that then one at a time. Since we haven't reserved resources when we send things into the network, we don't know whether or not the resources are going to be available at that instant. So we have to queue up our packets to wait for the resources. Okay. And this queuing up of packets leads to delay factors for our data as it's being transmitted. So each packet is going to experience delays as it's forwarded from one node to the next, and those delays can be variable if there's congestion and if they have to wait to be forwarded. Okay, so the plus of this system is, so as long as somebody is queued up, then as long as there's sort of packets to transmit, then transmission will take place.
Okay. So,
there's, again, a number of delay components. It'll take some amount of time just to send the packet along the link. In this case, we're assuming that that's small, so our propagation is small. It takes time to form the packet. Okay, and so if the packet has a length L and is being transmitted at a bit rate R, then it takes L over R to form the packet. And at each node, the way that works, the packet is received, examined, and then forwarded again. So you have to receive the whole packet before forwarding it. And therefore, this transmission delay occurs at every node along the way. So the more nodes you travel through, you're accumulating delay. Okay.
Again, that becomes worse if you have queuing.
So if you have queuing, then your delay is related to how many packets are in front of you in the queue. And additionally, if the queue gets too big, well, there's only finite storage available, so you're also going to start losing packets.
Okay.
So, in terms of, again, quality of service, the packet switching is not as ideal. But, depending on the characteristics of the users, you can end up, you can allow more users in the network. Okay. And so, for example, we have users that require a tenth of the bandwidth when they're active, but they're only active a tenth of the time. Okay. Now, if you had circuit switching and you had to reserve all the resources, well, then each user needs a tenth of the bandwidth, so 10 is the maximum number. If you have packet switching, then, well, depending on what assumptions you make, if you have 35 users, the probability of 10 being active is really small, okay? And so that's the probability of encountering any extra delays in the system. Okay, so it's a more efficient way of using the network resources. Okay, so in terms of packet switching is good if your users are not only sort of infrequently require the resources. Circuit switching, if your users are always needing the resources, then you might as well go for circuit switching. In terms of quality of service, again, since you're reserving your resources, you can actually make guarantees on quality of service in terms of delays. In terms of packet switching, it's not possible to make those guarantees because the delay is going to be dependent on what's the usage of the network. So what we'll see for wireless systems is a lot of the delays and the unpredictability we're talking about here is through the whole system. If you have wireless connectivity, then a lot of the issue relates to getting the first access to the first link. And so we'll see that that's, in some cases, can be controlled slightly better than sort of a whole general quality of service issue. Okay, so the final topic that I'll mention is the organization of packet switch networks. So again, this is not relevant to telephone networks. And the idea that your system, your system services are arranged in a layered fashion. And so why would you divide it up at all? Well, obviously because the system is complex. Why layered? Well, it just happens to sort of conceptually work pretty well for network systems. Okay. And so in terms of implementation, if you have something like TCP/IP, then the protocols are implemented in this layered fashion. We'll also mention the OSI reference model. So when discussing networks and sort of various components of networks, typically the reference model is discussed, and you'll say you're working at a certain layer. Okay. So, yeah, arguably, if you're sending data through a network, then certain tasks have to be performed. Bits have to be formed up into signals, and the signals transmitted over the medium. Okay, and so that's our lowest layer, our physical layer is just sending bits. Now we want the bits to actually make up packets. So our link layer is concerned with sending packets point to point. So obviously it relies on the physical layer to actually send the bits, and then it makes up those bits up into packets and ensures that the packets are getting there correctly, and if they aren't, resends them. Okay. So that gets packets point to point, but we have this idea of relaying, so we don't want point to point to point, but we want point to point. And so the network layer is going to be concerned with sending packets over multiple hops to a destination. Okay. Obviously, it's relying on the link layer to get the packets point to point, and then it's making a decision about where's the next place to send our data to. Okay. So, global addressing is done. So you need some way of addressing all the different places a packet can go. And then you have routing protocols, so you have decisions about where we send our packets based on our addressing. Okay. So that gets packets from one end of the world to the next. But we actually want to get the packets from one program. So this is from one machine to another machine. So IP is addressing machines. We want the packets to actually be from one program to another program. And so our transport layer allows us to do that. It establishes a connection between sender and receiver and gets the packets from one program to another program. And obviously then the packets are used by the applications. Okay. So higher layers are using the services provided by lower layers, and they're only communicating with adjacent layers. Okay. So the application layer only communicates with the transport layer. The transport layer only communicates then with the network layer, up and down between the adjacent layers. Okay. This allows us to simplify our functionality and we can then simplify the transmission of data, and we use what's called encapsulation. So we start out with a message to send, and we at the application layer, we give that message to the transport layer, and the transport layer does not concern itself with the content of the message. It's just a bunch of bits to it. So the transport layer needs to communicate with remote transport layers, so it adds its information to the message, and then passes the message down to the next layer. So in this case, the network layer. And the network layer, again, doesn't care about the content of the message, but will append its own information to be used by subsequent network layers. Okay. And down to the link, which again will add its information, and down to the physical layer. Okay. Now, as the network travels from node to node, depending on exactly what's being done, what the setup is, it'll travel up and down more or less of the stack. So if you're part of a local area network, you're just trying to get out to the access point, well, the local area network is point-to-point connectivity, so you're only dealing with the link. If you have a router, so you're in the middle of the network and you're just trying to get to your destination, well, you need to know how to navigate through the networks will go up and down through the network layer. And finally, when you reach your destination, well, you've got to go all the way to where you established your connection and finally up to the application. Okay.
Okay. So, in practice, that's sort of how things work. And again, if you take your typical undergraduate networks course, they'll spend time talking about how each of these individual layers are organized and what their functionality is. Okay. In wireless, in this module, again, we're going to look at sort of different layers as they relate to different types of networks. Okay. Now, again, the TCP/IP protocol stack is what's implemented. About the same time that people were busy implementing that stack, the OSI reference model was proposed. And it's got a lot of similarities to the TCP stack. You've got your physical link, network, and transport layers. But then on top of transport, you have three separate application-oriented layers. Okay. And in particular, we have the presentation and session layers. And the presentation is responsible for things like encryption, compression, data conversion. Session is concerned with managing sessions at a higher layer, a higher level. Nobody has ever seen the real need to implement these. So typically we just, if these sorts of functionalities are required, then it's up to the application layer in general to implement it. Okay. So, why mention the OSI model at all? But mainly because it's in terms of a conceptual model, it's the accepted conceptual model for the layered network architectures. Okay, so it was the first to introduce ideas such as data encapsulation and the virtual communication between layers of the network. And people still refer to the layers by this model. So if you're dealing with networks, you would say layer 3, okay, and layer 2. So in terms of implementation, it's TCP/IP. In terms of, again, theory, it's the OSI model. So, how does that relate, again, to us? Well, we are going to spend some time talking about the physical layer, just because the characteristics of radio transmission are what drive all design decisions for wireless networks, so we need to understand what those characteristics are. So we'll start with the idea of signal propagation and the idea of signals dying off, essentially.
and signal modulation and how modulation then over radio networks changes your performance characteristics and how you can improve that.
Using sort of more complicated modulation techniques like spread spectrum or OFDM. Okay. The data link layer, so your point-to-point communication mainly becomes an issue for local area networks or access links. And so this is we're mainly going to look at this in the context of the 802, the wireless members of the 802 family. And again, the main interest here for us is the idea of sharing the mediums and medium access control. And so we'll see how that's done. And in addition to that, sort of how we provide quality of service in doing so.
Okay.
There are issues at the network layer. Obviously, one of the big functionalities of the network layer is the routing. We'll consider that in terms of ad hoc networking. We won't look into the idea of mobile IP and how you maintain your
IP address while in motion. Okay, but yeah, that's beyond the scope of this. That's more an application issue.
Okay, so we don't really look at transport layer issues. Again, there's some considerations with TCP in the context of mobility, but we're not looking at that. Okay.
And in turn, and again, we won't look at applications, although, again, we do look at quality of service and link access,
and that obviously has an impact on applications.
Okay, so
the layering concept, well, again, anytime you deal with networks, it comes up. You won't see it so much as cellular, although cellular networks do have a layering idea for their control parameters. So when they send signaling information, so control information, they do have a layered architecture for that. Now, again, local area networks run at layer 2, ad hoc networks run at
layer 3. Cross-layer, the performance concerns have led to cross-layer proposals.
Okay, so that was just sort of a fairly hand-wavy review of a few basic network concepts. It helps in terms of understanding, but it's not crucial for the upcoming module. I mean, they are networks, and they do sort of all that is background to understanding why, sort of again, certain design decisions were made for different types of networks. It would be good to have some book in hand if you're not that comfortable with any of what I've been saying. And so There are newer versions, I think, of all of these at this point, but Tannenbaum, Stallings, Burris and Ross, any of those give you a very
comprehensive and relatively easy to read introduction to network concepts. Okay, in terms of what we're going to do, well, first we're going to look at
communication systems and how they impact on radio communication systems, the features of radio transmission, cellular networks, so abstractly, how do we provide coverage, and then we'll look into the implementation of the entire network, not just that first link, and then data-oriented networks, so the more structured ones, so part of the 802 family, and then ad hoc networking, which then might be more relevant to IoT. The assignment is based on a simulation model using NS3.
Okay, and it just explores a few aspects of wireless networking. Okay, so that's it for today.
What's the breakdown? Like, how much is the CA worth?
The CA is worth 25% and the exam then 75%.
And is the CA just the project?
Yeah, it's an assignment which I've broken up into two parts. The first is getting, basically turning NS on and getting it running, and then the second part again, sort of using it to test various aspects of usually something to do with local area networks. Okay, any other questions? Next week we'll start with, again, the idea of a communication system and move on from there.